This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall. Welcome to Beyond the Wall. On tonight's episode, we'll briefly discuss some FFG news, and then move on to part 3 of our house features with House Martell, joined by guest Aaron Glazer. We'll close with some comments about next week's episode and the upcoming regionals.
This is episode 15, and we've actually got some FFG news to talk about this week, John.
We do. I'm not aware. What is it?
We're lucky because it was posted on the website the day that we're recording, which is the last time we'll be able to be up to date for about 2 weeks as I'm traveling as of tomorrow, Saturday. But they just posted Gen Con information on the official FFG website.
Oh my God, I'm excited.
There you go. The big news that comes out of there is not necessarily all that much Thrones related. Thrones is going to have the Melee on Thursday and the Joust on Friday, so back-to-back, which is good. And
Thursday,
so
Friday, okay, yeah.
That makes sense, and that's good to know. But they did give some other information that I thought was quite interesting, was we were right in our speculation, because they say that there's going to be an initial release tournament for the Warhammer 40K LCG.
Really? What?
Yeah. They don't say. They say stay tuned next week, so we won't be able to cover that in detail, but that they're going to have a release tournament for the 40K LCG, so...
So we will be able to cover that because Gen Con posts tomorrow. So we'll actually be able to go to the Gen Con website and see all of the stuff tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. So you could probably just go online and check it and then find out.
And see. But I'm sure they'll give some information about how to get the product and some other stuff that won't be on the Gen Con website at that point.
You know, I'm kind of bummed they haven't mentioned a draft event, like on, you know, Wednesday or Sunday.
Well, I mean, we should check the Gen Con stuff we posted, but...
It's Thursday, Friday.
It's Thursday, Friday, yeah.
I may have done my flight wrong.
Ooh, you'll have to redo that. But the draft isn't that surprising. There was an interview that Team Covenant did with Christian Peterson and asked if draft would ever become part of the official format, and Christian Peterson had given a categorical no.
Said no, yeah.
So there may be a warm-up event. I don't think that would make this listing, but it won't be part of the North American Championship. But you had some news pertaining to Canadian Nationals.
Yeah, we know the location now. So it's going to be in Gatineau at Multizone. So it's 100% on. There is going to be a Canadian Nationals. It's going to be at Multizone Gatineau. And what we're waiting for now is the date.
It would be good to know that early and well in advance. But for those of you not familiar with Canadian geography and who might be considering making it out to a Nationals, Gatineau is essentially the other side of the river from Ottawa, which is the Canadian capital in Ontario. So yeah, it's fairly accessible by flights and the like.
And it's like 35 minutes from my house. Woohoo!
Which means you're hosting everyone that flies in, right?
Right, my wife, the 4 kids, and everyone else from Thrones. Yeah, that's going to not work out.
Babysit one of your kids and no?
Yeah. Yeah.
Besides, you should have them competing in the tournament.
Competing, yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah, well, we had that star player at Gen Con who did surprisingly well for her age, remember?
Yeah, she was like nine years old and beating up people. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah, so you've got to train yours up to take the Canadian National Championship.
That sounds good. You know, she already has the evil laugh down so that when she wins or she thinks she's winning, she will laugh in her opponent's face. So, I mean, that's the first step, right, in Thrones play.
Mm-hmm. Other news worth mentioning. So normally I'd go over the winners of tournaments from this weekend. Unfortunately, we're recording on Friday, and I won't be able to record. But one of the biggest tournaments, Milano goes to Stalag in Milan in Italy, should have happened this weekend, and hopefully we'll get the stats in the annals sometime this week so we can look at how the major European tournament scene is evolving. But still no North American results to report. That doesn't start till next week. right, John, well, you want to introduce our guest?
Sure. First, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. I just say that every time. I'm sure Alex cuts it.
It gets cut out every single time because we already have it in the intro.
So welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. We're joined today by Aaron Glazer. Everyone just calls him Pulse. I don't know why. Why do they call you Pulse, Aaron?
Some website I used to write for was Inside Pulse. My name became Pulse Glazer, and when I was making usernames, it was in my head, and I didn't really think to change it.
So Aaron's been on the show before. He's from the New York Meta. He's got some serious regional wins under his belt. I think he's still striving for a national or a world win shortly. Is that correct?
That's correct, except serious regionals means one.
It was a serious regional. It was the D.C. regional. I mean, there's...
D.C. store championship,
store championship,
New York regional.
Oh, well, New York regional, that counts too. We're good. So you're known for Stark, but you're one of the people that first started to scream that Bloodthirst was a strong archetype. So it's kind of fitting that you've joined us today to talk about Martell.
Martell is my favorite house. Like, my house is covered in Martell stuff. It's just, I don't know why, but I've not had the success I've had with Stark and Targ with Martell.
So when we discussed it on our FAQ episode with a fellow metamate of yours, Vapad, we said that Martell was probably the second most hit. We had placed Bera first. So where do you think it stands in the meta now? And do you agree with what we were saying then?
Oh, Martell was – the builds that were good for Martell before the fact and the builds that are good now are not remotely the same. But Martell has one amazingly clear Tier 1 build in some form with Quentin. So that alone keeps it afloat. But I think it's got some other good builds too.
I think Martell has two amazing Tier 1 builds.
We're jumping ahead of ourselves. We may potentially – build some of these decks. Probably what I want to talk about first is this idea that Martell, just before the FAQ came out, was really a force with Bloodthirst, was really a force with Knights of the Hollow Hill. Have those decks completely disappeared?
I've seen a lot of icon manipulation Bloodthirst floating around. I've seen a few people try character light. It's definitely T2 right now. There is some good stuff with Knights of the Hollow Hill, but it's... I don't know, I hate saying 1.5 because, damn it, 1.5 is just 2. But it's about as close to 1.5 as you get. It can beat some really good decks. It's just there's a little bit too much immune to events in Stark and a little bit too many ways to take care of their influence without the Red Keep.
Yeah, I also think that the Martell Hollow Hill deck can get rushed pretty hard if the rush player is smart. So that can give it issues too in the current meta.
Yeah, I'd say that both of those decks intrigue me. Because there will be a version of Bloodthirst that's going to come back to the top. I mean, an agenda that lets you draw two cards, the reliable kind of card draw, is going to show up again. And I have a feeling that those builds will be abusing Arianne and the rivers and being able to recycle the Shadows Arianne. But I think the reason that we can't build decks and tell people that they should be ready for these is that those decks have not been solved yet. So if you have the deck-building chops to build that Hollow Hill deck or that Bloodthirst deck that'll win a tournament, you probably don't need our decks as a starting point. And I just don't think you're going to see enough of that until it gets solved to really need to worry about those decks in the meta at the competitive level. All right, so we've been dismissing two of the builds that we decided not to build. So what did we decide to build? Or Aaron, what did you decide to show us this cast?
I decided on Martell Summer. It seems like, and the meta moves awfully quickly. So it seems like the second the fact came out, everyone, summer and winter everywhere, great! And then everyone, ooh, if summer and winter everywhere, then only winter is any good because summer has that terrible, terrible drawback. And then finally everyone's like, we can just tech against winter with King's Roads and Ravens and not really have to worry about it. But if everyone's just teching against winter with Mr. King Roads and most people stop playing winter, guess what that makes good again?
It's fast cycling, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you're talking about this kind of meta shift that keeps happening, so you have to call for your individual meta. I think teching versus winter doesn't hurt most decks if you were going to include one cost, gold-producing locations anyways, because it's so easy to throw in those King's Roads. So I would still do it even if you don't expect a lot of winter. Why not?
I agree. That also, if you're teching against winter, then people will very quickly, with the way the meta moves, stop playing winter, which means Kings of Summer is suddenly awesome.
If I'm not mistaken, this is a similar version to a TLV deck that was run around this time last year.
this is, I basically had the old TLV Martell I was running back then. I ended up falling completely in love with Targ TLV and playing that at regionals and such. But the Martell TLV didn't lose very much. It was absolutely tier one. So I just went through and cut out anything that, well, either the restricted list had changed or wasn't very good in the current meta, and this is what I came up with. It's not like the Long Voyage wasn't dominating an aggro meta.
Yeah, and we're back to an aggro meta, so if you can do very much the same tricks. That was a mean Martell deck when that was making its rounds, so it's kind of neat to see it come back in a different form.
Let's hope it actually works.
So tell us the story a bit behind this deck. How does this deck win?
Well, it's got an awful lot of two-claimers, and it's got an awful lot of draw. I decided to be very unconventional and play three Black Ravens because, well, Winter absolutely destroys it otherwise. But also because I've got enough other little draw with Samwell and Taicho to be able to hopefully draw into a Black Raven without having to spend my time for Ravens, which means that should someone make it Winter, I should have a Black Raven to get rid of it. If anything else goes wrong, I've also got the Lost Message. And again, enough other draw that I should be drawing into a Black Raven once we start getting rid of each other's Ravens.
See, the Lost Message is a call I think it's almost compulsory if you're playing Kings of Summer. The drawback on Kings of Summer of drawing one fewer card is just absolutely huge. And the fact that you can use Lost Message in the plot phase, get rid of that White Raven, and then you can draw your two cards, it's just a world of difference.
And it gives you some nice spot attachment removal, too. I like that plot, actually, in season decks.
I was worried about it at first until it was pointed out to me that, well, I was like, I'm going to have to get rid of my Black Raven all the time with this stupid plot, and what good is that? Once I, but if the game goes that far, I'm just playing Lost Message turn 7, and turn 8 I'm playing a time for Ravens to grab another Raven. That's another reason to run extra Ravens.
So, you mentioned Taicho. How do you find him? I've actually been cutting him from my decks. So, at first, I was like, ooh, draw is good, you know, prize two, but he's such a suboptimal character outside of the draw, and because of his three cost and the fact that he's prized, I've actually been cutting him from a large portion of my decks. I still use him in Greyjoy in some decks, but he's not the auto-include that I actually first thought he was.
I like the extra gold. I like the extra draw, especially in case my draw gets turned off. I basically want to be draw capping almost every turn. The deck will or should win by just having a lot of good cards. It's got the Gaston module, and I want to hit the Gaston combos as soon as humanly possible as well. I want to have enough gold to replay everything, and he helps with absolutely all of that. Almost everything is built around getting that kind of stuff set up. In addition, I needed a few season-independent draw effects, just in case things didn't go my way or it ended up not being summon. I've been cutting him a lot from Lannister, but he doesn't tend to get cut from Stark. And he's actually cut from all my other Martell decks, too, besides this one. But doesn't get cut from Stark for me, and he doesn't get cut from Greyjoy.
Now, one thing, you mentioned this Gaston Grey module, and most people are quite familiar with it, but I really like combining the Gaston Grey module with High Claim, because I think it allows you to put a tremendous amount of pressure. Even if you can't get rid of the characters you really want to get rid of with Gaston Grey, you can force them to die to Claim or the other way around. It gives you tremendous pressure.
Gaston Grey plus the Lost Oasis destroys people with words. I can kneel something out with the Lost Oasis. I can bounce something else. Marcella is fantastic for stuff like that because with her one icon, you don't ever care about bouncing a move. Get your High Claim through. It ends up working out fantastically. And I've got three High Claim plots. So
we talked about, you know, using Gaston Grey with a lot of economy. So you're only running 10, am I correct in saying 10 locations that produce gold or reduce?
Yep, 10 it is. It's 10 plus 3 Summer Ravens, plus 3 4 gold plots and 1 5 gold plot. So while reducers and everything are great, the original gold curve should be kept in mind too. And I've got a lot of high gold stuff. I think I have 2 3 gold and obviously Valar. So yep. I generally should have a heavy gold advantage, especially once I get that Raven in place.
Okay, I can get behind that with the plots being so high in gold value. I tend to like to run, you know, 11 to 12 locations if I'm running a Grass and Gray module, just to ensure that I always have that resource advantage to be able to keep playing those nobles.
Now, I sort of want to touch on a few smaller effect cards. So, for instance, I had a lot of fun with the Oberyn's Shield Bearers when we were running it in our No Agenda that we built on the cast. But is there specific situations that you've been using them in?
Yeah, they're fantastic against Stark Murder. There's very few things like stopping a No Quarter that you know they have when they've been, you know, they've been using Lewin to grab a Vent. And you're just like, oh, those Vents can just sit in your hand for the time being if that's okay. Or against, or knocking off all the saves. It's really wonderful pre-Valar against Greyjoy.
And it's really good against Burn as well, right? You don't have to worry about them burning stuff with events if you got one of these that you've discarded, if you've somehow managed to keep it alive.
To the challenges phase.
To the challenges phase,
where they can't just eat the triggers with location
producers
meals.
Stuff, yeah.
You're restricted as Viper's Bannerman. It's always a really solid choice. It gives you Valor resilience. As soon as that's on the board, your opponent has to think twice about Valoring, especially when you're Ghast and Graying certain key nobles. But you're introducing some new characters since the last time I built a Martell deck. Spy from Starfall, for instance, which we discussed a little bit in our review, and then the Desert Raider as well. So is there a story behind either of those?
The Spy from Starfall is one of my favorite new cards in the game. When you combine that with Ariane, it doesn't matter if she counts her string. Almost no one except occasionally Lannister can defend that. And she, Ariane packs stealth. You're getting that two claim unopposed almost always. If you don't have that out, or you don't really care about offensive injury because you've been clearing out their hand and you have 50 cards, it's phenomenal for defense. You want to be able to make sure you defend defense intrigue with this deck because you might have Ghast and Grayed back, say, a Red Viper or an Ariane, and you don't want to lose an intrigue challenge and then lose that character. Spy from Starfall is very often burning on the sand for intrigue.
Yeah, and you have the ability to give her stealth through your Lost Oasis, even on defense, if you need to block a stealthed character that has an intrigue icon to ensure. So I like that.
And you can give her icons with the Greenblood Merchant. And, I mean, opponents, not that many decks are running influence or reliable influence right now, so the Greenblood Merchants seem like a pretty interesting play.
They've gotten so much better suddenly. The Desert Raider has been okay. There have been times he's really good early game. If you can get him going early game before the boards get packed, he's great. But late game, that prize one that keeps repeating really does add up. That's why he's only a 1-0.
So what do you think of the problem matchups? You mentioned Winter, but you do have a fair bit of anti-Winter tech. You do have that extra Raven. Is it really the Winter deck your big fear? Or
I'm not really worried about Winter with it. I feel like I have enough anti-Winter tech that, I mean, Stark Winter's a nightmare matchup for pretty much everyone because it's Stark Winter. I mean, and whether using the Winter agenda or not, that's a T1 deck. But most other Winter I'm not really scared of. The biggest problem matchup is, just like everybody else has been saying, the Dragon Pit. That deck is a nightmare. Printing Aegon was mean enough, but then immediately printing Viserys to stop the best Aegon protection was just ridiculous.
I know that last week Justin was telling us, you know what I'm really afraid of? Every single deck you say what it shouldn't be matched up against is Dragon Pit. So I made a conscious effort to get a decent anti-Dragon Pit deck on the cast this week. So what do you have against Burn? I mean, things like Lost Spearman can be pretty good resource advantage, and you are drawing a ton of cards, so if they're relying on card to card, you can probably get stuff on the board. But you got a lot of strength twos and a lot of things that just won't last if Aegon and the things they hit the board.
He's got the Viper's Bannerman.
Yeah.
There is the Viper's Bannerman. That's really it. I'm aiming to hit their threat. Most card players, I mean, heavily announce when they're going to threat. They Valar turn or two before. Like, it's looking like they could Valar, but they have a bunch of cards in hand, so they might burn instead. I want to try and trap it on a Song of Summer. Make that threat less of a threat. And then run my cancel stuff.
Yeah.
Again, Burn, I'll be saving my cancel specifically for that, especially because I think he has that strength boost. I'll probably lose to Burn anyway. But
so what about other things? The aggro versus aggro matchups where big armies, big beefy armies, or the old way or something like that, It looks like the old way could actually be a threat to you.
The old way is a problem. Seth, who's very new and getting good way, way too fast, is running a really top old way with a ton of answers, ton of cancel, lost message, all sorts of painful, painful things. The best answer I've found for him is fleeing to the wall, which I do not have room for and I cannot afford. So, luckily, Gaston Grey does mean things to the old way. I can, once the Maiden's Bane is a character, it's vulnerable to bounce, and it's relatively deep, so I should have something to bounce it.
That's actually something I completely dismissed. Gaston Grey is actually anti-old way tech.
I just have to be very careful with it.
Yeah, you have to...
Because the old way tend to run some location destruction. So
I found a really good way to stop the old way also is to just, whenever you want to attack with two characters. You need a lot of chump characters. You need some renown and chump characters. And I've got the refugees and the lost spearmen to just be the chump in the challenge with my Viper Ariane.
Heck, and even the Desert Raider with the right icons.
At some point, they run out of ways to stop me. And then there's that new location that's going to come out and make us all cry.
The Herodot? The old Wick one that we've seen, yeah.
Yeah, just keep copying it. That'll be great.
All right. So are you planning on taking this to any big tournaments, like, say, New York, so I can tech against it?
I am absolutely not taking this to New York because I have, I might, but I have more or less no idea what I'm taking to New York.
Well, at least there's two of us. I'm reassured.
I'm only making one regional, so my deck is going to be chosen with a great deal of care.
All right. Can we talk about the deck that I spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours building?
Yes. Let's do exactly that. What do you have for us, John?
So I have a deck that I basically didn't build at all. I think I changed two cards. And it's a Martell Conquest to Baratheon deck that's making the tours. Now, I basically went online and I copied it from, I put it in the comments if people are interested later, Garrett Green, yeah, Green.
You took that version instead of Jim's version? Or?
Yeah, I think it was a little more tweaked. I think he took this version to a couple tournaments, and I think it's a little bit. The only thing I went and changed was I switched in a paper shield, and I changed a plot. Can you guess which plot?
Fear of Winter seems to be missing.
Fear of Winter wasn't in that deck, the original version of this deck.
I'm extreme. Oh, you're running Orphans, right, I see.
Yeah, I got Orphans, yeah. As my restricted. He had Orphans as his restricted, which I think is a good call to push it out through the early challenges. You know, in general, this deck is Art of Seduction to the Spheres. This version runs some more nobles, so there's a single Power of Blood as well to give it a little bit more lasting power than some of the other decks if they, you know, open up with some kind of plot that you stick that could slow down your rush. You could, you know, Forgotten Plans it on turn two, then Power of Blood when they try to value, and then go back to your to the Spheres if you haven't won the game yet.
This deck does Conquest right. It's fast. It uses several of its prized keywords to put power on the opponent's house that it can then take.
The Seats of Power are the big one.
Yeah, Seats of Power, the Seat of Power, the Summer Sea, and...
Narrow.
The Narrow Sea, yeah.
The Narrow Sea. As well as
each of those
Edric.
Is two, so...
You pop one of those, and you pop an Edric, and you got three power, and that's basically what you're going to be able to take off in your two rounds. But I think with the addition of some icon manipulation and the first Snow of Winter, this deck can be pretty resilient. And it's really, really fast versus a lot of matchups. I think this is one of those decks that everyone has to test against and make sure they can beat.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. I think you may dismiss this as being a deck that might not win as a one-trick pony. That plot deck makes it very, very dangerous. But mostly, if you haven't tested against this deck... You're skipping on a major element. This is the rush threat that you're facing.
Yeah. He calls it thinking, the three of, the paper shield, the nightmares, and the desperate measures that can just shut down so many of the options that people would normally use to counter a really fast rush. You know, they're like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll no quarter key characters. I'll hick that, I'll paper shield that, that's not going to happen. You know, they're like, well, you know, I got this big beefy army. Well, that's great. I'm going to remove all the icons off that army and push through my challenges anyways. So you got to be pretty scared of this deck.
It also has the counters to, you know, Core Melisandre. It's got to run those nightmares as a counter to Core Melisandre, to Jalbarjo, to Alaris, to things that can slow it down at that point.
I've seen versions of this with the power claim events. I like the defensive events better.
Yeah, so do I.
Just as a side comment, I see some people running, claim two additional power on power challenges if you win and stuff like that. No, I like this much better.
I actually agree very much. There's too much stuff out there that can ruin your day if you're not ready for it, so you better have some answers. Can I make a couple suggestions for things I have in my module of this that
sure. You
don't? Spy from Starfall plus Melisandre is an absolute monster. You include them in the same entry challenge, it's generally going to be unopposed. You get 2 power.
Yep, I can see that.
And Taste for Blood works fantastically with Elden Estermont. It's one game for me all by itself.
I'm a little hesitant to put attachments in there and that they don't increase your board presence.
Yeah, I'm hesitant for the attachments too. I think it slows you down, and there's so much attachment removal in so many different decks now. The seasoned decks are just running a plot that can discard it.
Target they're not going to burn that plot, though.
They might. In a matchup like this, I would.
Give me an extra power. I've already gotten power from that turn from it.
Yeah. I think one of the things that people don't realize with this deck is that it's able to use things like its desperate measures to accelerate its resource base as well. And that's one of the things it tends to do is over that first turn, just burn everything it has. And then it's really, really hard to remove things because your plot has been stuck or your plot has been blanked, depending on how well they anticipate what your opening plot will be. And if you're a good player and you're picking either Forgotten Plans or Art of Seduction according to your opponent, I think this is a deck that you can take to the win.
Yeah, I agree.
What is your strategy for countering it? What do you do when you're faced across from a Martell Conquest Vera?
I think it depends a lot on the deck. Obviously, it's a plot game. So I think everyone needs to be running some form of plot that they don't mind getting Art of Seduction that actually will slow this or stop this deck in its tracks. So yeah, if Fortified Position, for instance, gets stuck, then you're going to be blanking all the renown from that deck for 2 full turns, which I think should be enough for you to come back. And if you're not blanking the renown, they're going to be playing, Forgotten Plans on the second plot, which again slows them down. I also think other good plots include Burning Bridges so that they can't use those early game resources.
How about Dry Season? When I played against it after the cut, that's what I saw.
Yep.
Nice Dry Season in there.
Yeah, that location.
That would work. That would stop all their locations, yep. And that would really hurt them to claim, yeah. As long as you have more board presence before Fear of Winter, it would cause them problems.
See, I have played with a version of this deck, and I tended to adjust whether, depending on the opponent I was playing, I would open with Art of Seduction, basically if I could afford to lose the match, if it was in Swiss or if it was a player that I knew wasn't necessarily as strong, a deck that I knew wasn't as prepared. But most of the rest of the time, I was actually opening with Forgotten Plans.
And then trying to stick their T-turn Valor?
If they were forced to Valor that next turn, then yeah.
Or would you, this deck actually runs a fair bit of Nobles, so that the Power Blood does offer some protection to keep board presence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a tough choice if you're using Art of Seduction, if you want to stick their Valor, or if you want to save your, 2 or 3 of your characters.
You like Willis in this deck? I ended up cutting him from it.
I think, yeah, I like Willis in general, 2-cost Renown guy. You don't like him because he's an ally and there's so much dissension in the environment? Or
no, he makes Martell characters not count their strength if he's in the challenge. And while that doesn't matter for Renown, when I'm trying to get that extra little bit of defense or whatever else, it was a nightmare.
Well, you can, that would be my suggestion. He's only 2 costs. He's only 2 strength. Would his 2 strength, it was going to make a big difference on the challenges you're trying to push through?
Not necessarily that, but challenges I would try to defend. Once in a while, a challenge I was pushing through where I'd be wanting to get that, that extra renown won me the game and we're just trying to push through quickly. Mm-hmm. But if I Tim, I'm losing the strength on a bunch of my renown. But once in a while, I'll have a Lost Spearman waiting for defense and I won't abuse him because he'll take away the strength of my other guys. But I can defend. If I defend for 5, I'll win that entry. But I can't defend for 5, I can defend for 2 because he's there.
Honestly, I've only played against this. I haven't played it myself. He's a one-of, so I haven't seen him played against me a ton, but when he was they seem to be able to play around the small bit of reducing their Martell characters if he was in the challenge. I'd probably remove him for the spy, like you mentioned, Darren, without much hesitation. All right, it's pretty straightforward. What'd you build for us?
We had talked about it. We talked about what the top decks in the meta were for Martell, and one of the ones that came up again and again was Martell No Agenda. And so I got stuck with building Martell No Agenda, despite the fact that we'd already built one on the cast, and I was struggling to build one because they all wound up looking too much like the one we'd built previously, using the Viper's Bannerman and the Quentin and Gaston Grey modules. And usually I was cutting out the Summer, because a lot of the Summer tech that we were using previously was in a meta where there wasn't much Winter, and it was in a meta where we needed things like the Shadows in the South event to come back to hand, which is much less true now. But I think I finally unlocked a deck that's different from the previous version, a little faster, uses a different restricted, is not running Gaston Grey, and I'm actually really happy with this. It sort of came together fairly at the last minute. And my deck-building principles here were basically the same as when I was talking about the Lani No Agenda last week. I really want to maximize the use of Summon by the Conclave, and I have so many good things to fetch in this deck. I have Alaris for some matchups. I have Eris Okart for some matchups. I have Quentin Martell for some. I have Ygritte or Cold Hands for some matchups. And there are actually a fair few matchups in which I'm going to search out the Red Viper. If I have one in hand, I will dupe him on turn one, and I will start with a dupe Viper. And very few decks in the current meta have a good answer to an early Viper. Aside from that, I really wanted to make sure that this was a deck that was not as vulnerable to burn, so I threw in Venomous Blades, which sounds like an odd call, but Venomous Blades are weapons. I can run the Alchemist's Shop for +2 strength. Venomous Blades handle Viscerus quite well, so he won't be able to discard them reliably. And then I can put in a Flaming Sword and a Rusted Sword just for fun to make sure I have a couple of weapons to benefit those Alchemist's Shops. But I think that I can really put some strength on the board that is hard to get rid of.
It's a great idea. I really like Venomous Blade if you're going to run it. Just a singleton of Jamie would go a long way if you see a couple of Venomous Blades early. They'll be popping in and out of shadows, and Jamie can draw you an awful lot of cards.
That's actually not a bad idea. I was somewhat worried about card advantage in this deck because I really only have the House Messengers and... Well, obviously, the knight that when he disappears draws me a card. This is probably one of the weakest draws for a Martell deck. And I had a King's Landing in there, and it just didn't work. So Jamie's much more likely to be useful to me.
Well, because you're you and not John, you're not running the rivers. So draw will be a problem.
Yeah, draw will be a problem. However, I am running the Art of Seduction. And I mentioned this last week. It was in my last week's No Agenda. I have it in this week's. I found so much use out of the Art of Seduction in the current meta, especially against rivers, which are getting more and more prominent, and I feel like it buys me a ton of time against a rivers deck, and it's so easy to use.
Yep, it's, full plot, right?
Yeah.
It's an auto win against medium-level players who have no idea you're about to stick their Valar.
And that too, yeah, certainly. I mean,
so how do you think this deck would perform against, you know, the one I stole?
I mean, it depends. I'd probably wind up opening or being almost forced to open with the Summon by the Conclave and pick something that is useful to me. I'm not going to be able to outrush you, so I wouldn't go get the Red Viper. But depending on what's on the board, Ygritte, Cold Hands, or an Alaris, typically the Alaris, and hope that you don't have one of your two Nightmares.
So when I've been fooling around with the No Agenda decks, the thing that I found in Martell that really, really helped was actually searching out the new Arion, because I can then put her in Shadows and then I can Val those rushy decks whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, I'd considered running the Shadows Arion, and in the last version, when I was really trying too hard to make this deck different, and I had a bunch of Warcrests in there, and I had some other stuff, and I was trying to avoid Nobles without Gaston Grey and using Power of Arms to give enough strength to survive burn. And so that's one where I had that other Arianne. And in the end, I just said, you know, this one's better, and I'll typically have something to pull out of Shadows, the Venomous Blade, anyway.
I don't think this Arianne's better. Unless you're running Gaston, I just don't think this Arianne's better. The other Arianne's a walking bundle of orders.
Yep.
I think she's significantly better.
And don't be scared to run one of each.
Yeah.
right? Then with your search, you can pick out the one that you need for each circumstance. Because right now you're running two of the other one anyways. So in my mind, I would run one of each, and then if I do run into one of these really fast rush decks, I have a really easy solution.
Hmm.
I get all.
Yes. I mean, I can see that. I'm a little hesitant because I, you know, that Ariane wins games on the claim two plot, bumping it up to three. The claim three entry challenge in itself can be sufficient to win a game.
But, you can still run one of her.
But all the other one can cause you not to lose a game. So
she can also win your game with a surprise to the Spears. Like, all of a sudden it's to the Spears and they weren't ready for it, and you have all your million renown out, the game's over.
Yep.
So it's just as easy to win by surprise with that Ariane. She doesn't have to be used defensively.
I'm willing to do exactly that. I'll swap that one out.
No, I've seen people... You know, you have Art of Seduction, so you can Art of Seduction. They're like, okay, you know, they arted my whatever. It's not that bad. I don't have to worry about, you know, two claim. I'll do this and this to try to, you know, shore up my side then into even retaliation all of a sudden. You know, you're going first, and now you have retaliation exposed. You can smash a big hole.
In our little network group, Dan Strahl loves doing that into breaking and entering, and you didn't play all your locations because you didn't know it was a breaking and entering turn. And all of a sudden, your opponent has your locations, and you're just like, oh, I think I just lost this game.
I chose Men of Pride mostly because stripping stealth from some key targets can really help with Lost Oasis, against things like Wildlings as well, even
if you
want seconds. So I probably wouldn't run Breaking and Entering in this particular case, but I could certainly see the power behind it.
So, and I guess against these rush decks, if you're not searching out Ariane turn one, you're opening with Art of Seduction to stick their art or their...
It doesn't stick art. Arts don't stick each other.
Oh.
But if you flip an art, you get to flip a different plot next turn.
Yeah, it's right there in the writing. Reading these cards really helps, Alex.
And so, just like Aaron had the Gaston Grey module in combination with some high claim plots, I think the Venomous Blade does something similar in that I can strip that refugee you were going to kill for claim. I can strip... Mira, I can strip someone like that and really put the pressure with claim 2, or if I get lucky, even claim 3 in those cases. And so Venomous Blade is a really nice pressure that, you know, you're sacrificing the Bannerman or Narrow Escape or Negotiations of the Great Sept, which might be decent in this deck, to do. And it's worth noting that some of the inspiration for this deck came from Florian, who helped me sort of tweak the idea that I had, and his version wound up playing Negotiations of the Great Sept. He preferred that to the Venomous Blade. But I'm just really keen on the anti-burn matchup, so I can finally be asked, what are the weaknesses, and say, not Dragon Pit.
All right, so what are the weaknesses?
Not Dragon Pit. bet you didn't see that coming. No, this is a deck, I mean, once you get one of those characters whose strength you can keep up at 5 or 7, regardless of what they were starting at, you're starting to be much, much safer. Even a Flaming Sword guarantees that you're not going to be affected by them at all. And Venomous Blade is an answer to Isseris, which is the one attachment removal you're really quite worried about. And then the other attachment removal is you can potentially, he calls it, thinking it.
Mm-hmm. Don't get the other benefits of the Alchemist Shop, too. Doesn't it give you Deadly as well?
Yes, it does give you Deadly, which on, for instance, the Viper they're attacking is just really, really mean.
It's got to be great against Wildlings.
Yep. Honestly, I think this deck is really good against Wildlings as well because of, as you mentioned, the Deadly, because I can search out Ygritte, because I can lock that the early plot cycle and delay their river cycle if that's what they're running by an additional turn. I think this is a comfortable matchup against Wildlings. I think this is a reasonably comfy matchup against most burn. And so with that, I think it's very different from most of the other decks that we've presented. Some of the things that really hurt it are like an Alchemist Guildhall or a Longship Maiden's Bane. I do have two Hellhold Docks in there to handle locations, but against Lani, I'm unlikely to be able to kneel out the Guildhall.
To an extent. They'll probably be running Naval Escorts and Cancel, too. So it's iffy. Any non-plot-based answers to that old way deck are very iffy
at that point. I think it's a deck that can't quite rush as fast enough as the rush decks do. So even if I do get the Red Viper out there early, I'm probably, I have to play against Rush decks very differently, and then against a deck that looks like it's going all out control, if I have a Red Viper in hand, I'll summon out a second copy, and I'll try and hit them really hard with that early. So I think it plays very differently against different styles of decks, and a lot of that versatility comes from using Summoned by the Conclave correctly. So I think you need to have practiced this deck a lot to get it to the point where it's winning tournaments. But from my first look at this list, I think it's a contender. I really like what it does.
I like this deck an awful lot. Are you guys seeing Northwind Keep a lot? Because Northwind Keep would beat this deck up fairly badly, too.
It's in all the Stark decks, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, but I have the choice as to whether I'm bumping their strengths or not.
No, not with the shop.
Right, but I have the choice as to whether I'm putting out the Venomous Blades or not.
Yeah. He doesn't have to play the five attachments he has, and if he uses the blade, he can drop it on any of his characters, and then once he loses the challenge, it goes back. So he can kind of use the strength boost or not at will.
Makes sense.
He could even choose not to play the Alchemist Guild shop if he wants.
If I was really that worried, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a really bad matchup for this deck, and, Lanny, I think, is a threat, but once Quentin gets killed, I handle Lanny so much better.
Yeah.
So, I think there is an answer to each deck. That doesn't necessarily mean that all decks are favorable matchups, but good use of Summoned by the Conclave, fetch out the right person, you have a fighting chance. I can't think of a deck you're really losing against.
I think you lose a lot more from the not against the old way, but you should be very close to 50-50 against pretty much everything else. A good old way has got a lot of answers for what you're doing.
That's true as well. There was a deck that I did think this might have a bad matchup against. I don't know if it has the right means to shut down something like a Rusted Maester. I can go look for Cold Hands and I can hope, but otherwise, I probably have to try to outrush a deck like that.
That's another reason to add that Ariane, because Ariane, surprising to Valar, will end that deck quickly.
All right, well, as we normally do, after we've discussed these decks, we should talk about some of the decks that we didn't talk about yet. What are the other Martell builds, we talked briefly about Bloodthirst and Hollow Hill and said those hadn't been solved, but what else is out there?
I think there's a lot of different ways you can build a good Tier 1, no-agenda Martell build right now.
Also very good, Wildlings. Underrated, but Wildlings with Gaston is a giant pain in the ass.
Is the Martell Wildlings running Rivers at this point?
I wasn't, but I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, so it's sort of on the fence on that one, but I wouldn't run Val like the Octagon deck did. I just don't feel like Val is a very good restricted call when we keep fearing Dragon Pit.
I don't like Val that much to begin with. I feel like she's a little overrated outside of Braithian.
Oh, a lot of people. She's got some meat in Greyjoy too, with heavy reaches and low curve.
A lot of people used to use the old event trick of switching Viper's Bannermen and the Wildling armies back and forth to generate draw in Wildlings.
Yeah, but that was back when you could play them for one. Now you're playing them for four. It's not quite as good.
It's not as good. No,
desperate
I agree.
Desperate tactics into, and you're only getting two draw off the Viper's Bannermen. Because the end of its trigger doesn't work. So there's a Martell deck that used to be really, really prominent and has sort of been shut down, and that's the Maester's Path. Now, I was thinking about that, and I'm pretty sure that if I were to build it, I'd build it as a no agenda now and still use the Conclave as my restricted.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you can still use a lot of the same tech. You can use Outwit. I used to run a version with a Dane sub-module where I would run the big Dane armies as well that get reduced by the number of Dane characters in play. And there's a little Dane guy that you can kneel to reduce Dane. So if you have him in play, you can play those other big armies for five. And it can be decent rush. You can, to the Spear's turn, you can use some of the Maester additional challenge events where you get extra intrigue or power icons.
Power
attacks.
Yeah,
power challenges.
Better, the plot cycling one. This way, you outwit something, and then you can go into a no-kneel.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there are two no-kneel plots in that deck, to the Spears and Schemes of the Scholar. You're using Conclaves that are reduced off your Refugees and your Apprentice Callers. I think that may still be a viable, pseudo-rush deck. The loss of Savas and the loss of the Agenda hurt it, but I think it can overcome those. I don't know if it's tier one, but I think it's another build I'd like to try.
We did try building one. Actually, Dark Touch and I tried building one this weekend, and Ygritte eats it alive.
Yeah, Conclaves versus Ygritte. Well, you do have three He Calls the Thinkings in that deck, probably. Well, maybe not. Maybe not three.
You have a few, but, I mean, if you don't draw one, you just kind
of
cry.
Any other decks you guys can think of?
For Martell, that's all that's coming to mind for me. Oh,
I think a lot of things are running Conquest to Martell to put in the Ghastly Grey module.
Yes, absolutely.
Conquest to Lannister is very good.
Martell Conquest to Lannister?
Martell Conquest to Lannister is very good.
Is that just a soft control bonanza? Or?
It tends to be Lannister to Martell is a little better, but it works the same way. It's just Neil stuff. What you can't Neil, you Ghastly Grey. It depends on which house-only control effects you like better.
See, I would go with Lannister generally, because a lot of Lannister's Neil comes in the form of characters that you don't want to give the power for. And while Ghastly Grey bounces, you're not giving any power, so.
That's if you're going control, I mean, I still think that the control Conquest decks are pretty ballsy, because if those backfire, that's a fair bit of power that can go elsewhere. But I can see it with the Ghastly Grey module, because it really doesn't give up much power.
Makes sense.
The only other thing I can think of is that I've seen people play Martell Knights of the Realm. I think that's mostly on the backs of the Kingsguard. They might be able to play Venomous Blade and fuel that deck. I think it's probably pretty interesting, but I haven't actually played it or against it. I've just seen it in the annal stats.
I have. You lose all your best knights. It's better no agenda, almost, like, specifically. No agenda, you can just grab your Jamie, play some Venomous Blades or whatever, and then you're in the exact same position.
Well, that's what I did. So maybe it is a great deck, except that I built the better version.
I actually think that your deck is damn near fantastic, like especially for a first draft. Really well done.
Yeah, me too.
I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm hoping to. All right, well, before we close off with Martell, I mean, we haven't thought of any other decks there, but any predictions for how Martell will play out in the current meta?
It would not shock me, especially once Harrenhal comes out, to see Martell plays extremely well. A Quentin build of some shape or form. A Martell build do extraordinarily well around, like, Gen Con World.
Harrenhal is going to change the meta so much, it's going to be ridiculous.
And Martell has, like, six refugees to use to fuel whatever bullcrap they want. They've got so much cheap stuff that you're just like, yeah, whatever, I'll kill this weenie.
See, what surprises me the most is that we said Martell was about the second most affected in that it lost two of its major builds and so on. And in the week and a half following the FAQ, 5 of the 10 tournaments I got data for were Martell wins.
Well, the Martell motto.
Win by losing, exactly. Hit them with a restricted list hard enough, and they just come back stronger than ever.
I know they're running Deceit that are just, like, nasty with Deceit right now. There's just not a good, like, there's not a great answer. Martell has so many amazing cards.
Yeah. I have to agree. Martell No Agenda is very strong, in my opinion, and there's lots of ways to build it.
Yeah, and I like it. I think it's a fun deck to play against, too. So,
yeah.
I'm glad it exists. So, Aaron, any parting comments?
New York is, once again, we're all building together, we're all getting together and trying to make this the best win in the world. It's actually our goal right now. We want to overtake DC, we want to overtake Spain, we want to be the best men in the world, and we're coming.
And June 7th, the New York Regional, it's just recently Steve Simone decided he was going to make it out there after I was chatting with him and telling him that I was going to be there. And JC Wama is still confirmed. So we've got some big names coming out there. There's no guarantee that someone like me will make the cut at a tournament like that, but I know I will have a blast. There are a lot of people that I know through the boards, through the Skype group, or that I've met once, at Gen Con or at Worlds. So I'm really looking forward to that tournament.
And the finals are at the bar. If you play me, shot with each plot.
I can't do shots.
Oh. How am I missing this?
I can chug a beer for each one. I can't do shots.
That's horrible. How am I missing this?
It's pretty great.
I better play a rush deck.
Can only go 3 plots.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot for doing this, Aaron.
So, On our next episode, we are going to have a very special guest talking about a very special thing. We're going to have John Bruno on. Not only is he going to be doing Targ with us, but we are going to talk about his new champion card.
In addition, this week's actually pretty exciting in North America because it kicks off the North American regional season. So we have not yet had a North American regional, but this weekend of the 17th and 18th fields quite a few of those, not the least of which is there's the Montreal tournament. There's one in Minnesota, which is, I believe, the Days of Ice and Fire, although it may have been renamed. There's also one in Georgia and, I believe, one in Austin. And then a pair in Europe as well, the Finnish regional and a UK regional in Southend.
Sounds pretty solid.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.